A brief warning for our listeners. We're about to talk about porn for the next few minutes, so this next segment may not be one for you or your kids. Make that decision on your own. But for this conversation, I want to set aside for just a minute any debate over the morality or immorality of porn, because the real question for our next guest is, what is the effect that the consumption or viewing of porn has, especially on the young men of the world? Cindy Gallup created the website and ebook Make Love, Not Porn: Technology's Hardcore Impact on Human Behavior, and she joins us now. Thank you so much, Cindy.
And I promise I won't use any four-letter words on air.
That's great. Or any of this five- or six-letter ones that are going to give us fined. But let's go into your basic premise. And I'm correct in saying that this is really not about morality. It's not about whether you like or dislike porn.
Make Love Not Porn is not anti-porn. I'm pro-porn myself. You know, I watch and enjoy porn. And I have to explain to people regularly, the issue that I'm addressing is not porn, which has always been with us, always will. The issue really is that in a culture where we find it enormously difficult to talk about sex, despite the fact that everybody does it, parents are too embarrassed to teach their children about sex, schools and colleges are vilified if they try and make up the educational gap, hardcore porn has become, by default, the sex education of today, because there is nowhere else that kids and young people can get it from. And so, rather than understanding that porn is a fantasy world, there's literally an entire generation growing up believing that what you see in hardcore porn is the way that you have sex, and that is not a good thing.
And why is that not a good thing?
It's not a good thing because the nature of porn is that it is an artificial world. It is artificial entertainment. And what plays out in porn world, as per my website, is not what necessarily plays well in real world. It's fine to enjoy it for what it is, but when you translate that into these are the behaviours that I must engage in, then you will not find yourself having the most rewarding and fulfilling sexual relationships. And by the way, I should say that Make Love Not Porn is a gender-equal proposition, because right. What I'm talking about applies equally to women as it does to men.
So how to broaden the dimensions, the sort of bandwidth of sexual options for people who, and let's talk about the younger generation. I've got, you know, five kids who are growing up entering this world where they can get all this information at the flick of a switch. How do you, in the course of your discourse about sex with a young person, actually enlarge the options so that they don't just see what's online and go, oh, that's what you do? I mean, I'll tell you, teenagers don't really like to talk to their parents about sex.
They don't, but
for any length of time.
But actually, if you boiled my message of Make Love Not Porn down to one thing, it would be very simply talk about it. Ironically, overly porn infants' behaviour is driven by the best of all possible motives, not the worst, in the sense that we all get enormously vulnerable when we get naked. Sexual egos are very fragile, and people find it bizarrely difficult to talk about sex with the people they're actually having sex with at the time they're having it. So in that situation, you want to please your partner. You will seize your cues wherever you can find them. If the only ones you find are delivered by porn, then those are the ones you'll take. So I urge everyone to have an open, healthy dialogue about what they do like, what they don't like, and just talk about it.
But does that then extend also to the amount of, I mean, at what point is somebody perhaps consuming too much pornographic entertainment?
Well, I think it's very difficult to identify what too much porn is. But on the other hand, what I would say is that people do not realize how much porn you can watch if you really put your mind to it. So one young 20-something guy I talked to, you know, asked him how much porn he watched. He said, oh, you know, very little, only about 2 hours a day. And that
wow.
is very
Two
little.
Hours a day.
That is very little compared to a lot of other people I talk to.
So the takeaway here is keep your clothes on, and when you have your clothes on, develop a game plan that you can actually do with your clothes off.
I didn't hear her say
keep your clothes on.
You say that you default to the simplistic pornographic script when you're vulnerable and your clothes are off.
I'm saying that essentially, if your parents have never talked to you about sex, and by the way, I urge parents to begin talking to children about sex as soon as it comes up in any way at all, and you can absolutely manage that dialogue. But if you have had no sex education that allows you to understand what great sex relations are all about, then you are going to fumble your way into a modus operandi that does not mean that you and your partner or partners are going to have the best possible time. Just talk about it. Talk to each other. Actually open up a dialogue with your children or with your parents and with your friends and find out what real-world sex is all about.
Have you brought this sort of real-world message to some of these poor young guys who've basically, you know, sort of showed you how little they know about
let me contextualize this, okay. Because I'm extremely selective about whom I date. One of my fundamental criteria is that they have to be a very nice person. Good. I have great radar for very nice people, and I only date utterly lovely younger men. So I really want to stress that what I encounter is not the result of me being some predatory cougar encountering negative, you know, abusive young men. This is how fundamental and ingrained this is, that that this is just the way people approach having sex these days. And yes, I absolutely address that, but I have the confidence gained of being 51 years old of being able to talk about it. A lot of people don't.
Is this an American thing?
No, it's universal. Make love not porn is a global proposition. The website gets traffic from 180 countries, and I get emails from people all around the world about this, and many of them, by the way, ask me to translate the site because it is so applicable to their cultures.
All right, so I keep getting this wrong. Let me check one more shot at it here. You're something of a sexual evangelist, then, in the sense that you, by virtue of your wisdom, and in some cases, advanced years as a fabulously attractive person, can actually encourage younger people whose experience is mostly with these online worlds to have a lot more fun.
Well, I find that what really blows people away is the fact that I actually stood up on stage at TED and I talked in public about what everybody knows and nobody ever speaks about.
The TED conference.
So, right. Yep. So people feel able to share things with me and to connect with me in a way that they often haven't anywhere else. And so I'm really encouraging young people and people of all ages to open up a dialogue, talk about it, and have a much better sex life as a result.
Yeah, if people see your TED Talk, they're going to know. Yeah, you can tell Cindy anything.
Yes.
I guarantee you.
Oh, yes.
She's not squeamish. No.
No, she's not. What did you call it? A Puritan? You called us picky Puritans?
Yeah, well, compared to Cindy, we're
absolutely.
We got the hats on.
Cindy Gallup's new book is called Make Love, Not Porn, Technology's Hardcore Impact on Human Behavior. She also has a website, Make Love, Not Porn, which I'm sure she would encourage you to visit. Cindy, thank you so much.
Thank you very much indeed, guys.
So we've also been talking about the migration of African Americans back to the South. Does that story describe your family? Here's what Takeaway listener Tina Collins told us about her family's reverse migration on the show a few months ago.
Over the past, I'd say, 10 to 15 years, my sisters have started moving to the South, predominantly for better opportunities. I moved 3 years ago for better opportunity, and my dad has actually decided for another reason to move back to the South. He and my mom are both retired now, and with the economy, fuel costs rising, they felt that they could do much better financially if they moved back to the South.
Got a reverse migration story? Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or go to thetakeaway.org. I'm John Huckenberry.
And I'm Celeste Headlee. This is The Takeaway.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing.
Or politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.